Good morning. Very good to see you. Thank you for being a part of our worship this morning. Singing has been very good, very uplifting. We're thankful for great leadership in our worship, those that have led us thus far in our prayers. Thank you for the singing. Thank you. We are so blessed to have so many good leaders. I've been thinking pretty much all week long about the territory of my life. And I suppose 52 years ago or 51 years ago, I don't remember exactly which, it's the first time I read Robert Frost's statement that's there. And I've heard it many, many times since. I've heard Billy use it a number of times. In fact, the first time that I heard it used, he used it. And then I've heard him use it several times since. It's a fantastic statement. Great thought. Wish I would have thought of it. Wish I could have written the words as eloquently as Robert Frost did when he talked about two roads diverging in a yellow wood and about someone taking the one less traveled. It doesn't show up as well as I'd like, but there's a path there and just shows two directions. I would love it. I would absolutely love it if I had come a little over 60 years ago to the choice that I made to be a Christian. I chose to take what people have used this illustration to say as the road less traveled. Most of the world isn't interested in Christianity. I just continued to say how unbelievable it was to me back when we were looking at the lottery here in Tennessee, when I saw that 80% of the people in the state of Tennessee who claim to be Christians say that their Christianity had nothing to do with day-to-day decision-making. I still can't believe that's the way it is, but that's what people say. Christianity has nothing to do with me deciding today to worship or not worship. Christianity has nothing to do to say or nothing to say about me using God's name in vain and ugly language. God says nothing today about me taking something from you that belongs to you that you do not want me to have. I can't believe that Christianity says nothing to people about day-to-day decision making. Of course, those people who constructed that questionnaire wanted to know, will Christianity keep you from playing the lottery? Will you think that gambling of this type is wrong? Well, obviously, they were excited, I am confident. I didn't ever talk to anybody, it's just an opinion. I'm pretty sure they were excited about people saying, won't affect me whether I play the lottery or not. When we consider liquor by the drink in restaurants or a liquor store coming into Chester County, my Christianity has nothing to say to me about whether I drink or I don't drink. When it comes to living together, as many people are choosing to do so today in cohabitation, that has nothing to do with my Christianity. I can't believe that's the way it is. But apparently, that's the way it is. When we hear the words that were spoken before the Lord's Supper, to draw our minds on the reality of the death and the burial and the resurrection of Christ, I can't believe that my Christianity would have nothing to do with what I'm thinking about, how I feel about it, the depth of respect that I am willing to pay. I can't believe that when the contribution plate is passed in front of me, that my Christianity would have nothing to do with whether I give or I don't, or how much I give compared to what I eat out on at restaurants during the week. I can't believe that Christianity would say absolutely nothing to me about that. So I've just thought many times how neat it would be if I could come to that parting of the roads of living in the world or living for Christ. I'm standing here and I have to make a commitment today. Wouldn't it be neat if a little over 60 years ago I had said, I am going to live for Christ, and that's it. I don't ever have to make that decision again. I don't ever have to make that decision again. I don't know how it is for you. I think I do. You can decide for yourself, but for me, when I chose to enter into what Jesus said in Matthew 7, 13 and 14, enter into that narrow gate. Why? Because wide is the way. How easy the way is that leads to destruction. Many will find that. But narrow is the gate and difficult is the way that leads to life, and only a few will find it. For me, I believe I entered into that narrow gate. I confess the name of Christ. I was buried with Christ in baptism. I believe that. I was raised from that watery grave. I believe that God has forgiven my sins at that point, and I believe that God continues to forgive my sins as I walk in that pathway that's difficult. But you know what makes it difficult? My pride. There's this road of pride that leads from that difficult way back over into the worldly way, that broad way, the easy way. Because I don't have to fight my pride sometimes. I don't have to worry about what you think, because then I can do whatever it is you think. I don't have to worry about what you want me to do, because I can then do whatever you want me to do. So, when I think about Jesus and Him offering these ways by instruction, and I make a choice, that choice is not a one-time, one-and-done deal where I am the rest of my life walking in the light exactly like Jesus walked in the light without flaw. I'm so thankful, because you see, it's not just my pride. It's my selfish desire. I want to say ugly things sometimes. I want to do ugly things sometimes. I want to feel outraged at people doing that which is good and making me look bad because I'm not appearing to be who I want to appear to be. My selfish desires are strong, and they're many. I've said to you before, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, I'm one of the most selfish people you know. I fight my selfishness every day. That road of selfishness just turns so easily. When I don't want to do what I'm supposed to do, when I don't want to do what I feel the need to do, when I read a passage like James teaches us about visiting the widows in their affliction and keeping myself unspotted from the world, I don't even want to think about what it means to keep myself unspotted from the world, because you see, there would be spots and blemishes all over me. So it's not a one and done thing. I have to decide to stay on that pathway. Why is that so hard? I think this passage that we read a little bit ago gives us a lot of information. Because you see, I'm required by life. If I am a Christian, I'm required by life to constantly say, this is the Lord of my life. Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. I'm choosing Him to be Lord in my life. It would be so easy for me today, standing here in front of you, if one of you raised your hand and said, hey, Roy, who is Jesus Christ? It would be so easy for me to say, He is the Christ, the Son of the living God. Because I believe that. But every day when my selfishness pops up, when my desires pop up, when my temptations are so great, and I now have to decide who or what is Lord and King of my life, it becomes very difficult for me to confess, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and I'm going to make this decision that I'm having in front of me exactly in that light. I'm going to trust Him to lead my life. Jesus said, "Whom do you say that I am?" Boy, they had the answer. Some people out there say that you are Elijah. Some people think you're John the Baptist. Matthew adds Jeremiah. Or some of them didn't really know a name to put in there, but one of the prophets. And then Jesus asked the real question that you and I need to think about. Who do you say that I am? Not when you're standing on a podium in front of several hundred people and somebody's asking you who is the Christ, but when you young folks are at school and somebody's telling a smutty joke or somebody's sending you a sexting message or somebody is sending you some kind of thing, who is Jesus to you? And those of us that are older, when our selfish nature kicks in or somebody hurts our feelings and we start acting as though we don't want to be gentle and kind and loving and forgiving and we want to tell everybody just how bad they are and how hurt we are, who is Jesus to you? You see, our confession concerning Jesus is not a one-done thing. We have to do it over and over again. And this passage helps us see this pathway that I chose over 60 years ago is a road of confessing who Jesus is in those decisions that come up in my life every day. But what I don't like about it, even worse than that, is it's a road of conflict because, you see, sometimes even when I'm doing right, you know, one of the things that I've done with my mom back in the old days, when my mom was around and I was at home, my mom would say, "Now, you can't do this." And I would say, "But Mom, look at this good that I'm going to do. I'll be doing good." She said, "I don't care what good you're going to do. You're going to put yourself in this position." And she would not give in to me. I would know she's right. But I didn't want to listen to her, and I hated the conflict of knowing that I wanted to do something my mom did not think was good for me. And so I do what you do. I say, "Why? Why?" My mom would give me an answer, and I would say, "Why?" She would give me an answer again, and I would say, "Why?" And finally, she would say something that meant, "Because I am your mom, and I'm responsible for you. It's up to me to help guide you and lead you." And that's going to create conflict in your life because, you see, you're going to want to do those things. As I mentioned, my pride lifts me up and I want to do things. My selfish desires lift me up and I want to do things. Those things that I know are wrong are going to bang and bang and bang. And my commitment to God doesn't mean that my life is going to be filled with roses. It means it's going to be filled with conflict. Peter's a good guy, isn't it? Not just a good guy, a great guy. Peter's way, way too much like me sometimes. You see, when I think I know what I'm doing, I want to tell you what is right, and I've got it because you should listen to me. I just know. Well, why? I just know. Peter takes Jesus aside. You know, there are a lot of things in life I can't figure out, I don't get. What did Peter just confess? "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus begins to teach about his coming death. Come here, Lord. I can see Peter putting his arm around him, walking over away from everybody and saying, "Now listen. I know you're talking big about this sacrificing your life, but that ain't going to happen as long as I'm around. That cannot be." You see, Peter didn't understand the conflict that had to be present in the life of Jesus, in the life of Peter, that eventually took Peter's life, if tradition is correct. We know it took Jesus' life. That conflict that is breathtaking, but not just breathtaking, it's life-taking. That conflict is there. Jesus then turned and rebuked Peter and said, "Peter, you don't get it. You don't understand your mind is on the things of this world and on the things of men. You think protecting my physical life is the best thing you can do, and you're standing up and you're speaking up for me, but you don't know what you're doing. I must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of those people there, and I must die. Peter could never have eternal life without the conflict that created the death of Jesus. You and I cannot have eternal life without a constant clash with the world, without a constant clash with ourselves and our own desires and our selfishness. And we just need to be in conflict all the time. That's why the Bible consistently says things like it does in the book of Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10. Put on the whole armor of God. You're going to be in a fight. And the fight is not about flesh and blood. It's about principalities and powers and those things that the world is going to draw you to. The load less traveled is going to bring us conflict. And because you've taken that road doesn't mean that it's going to be the last time that things are going to happen. So it's a constant choice. The road just makes our choices hard because of our flesh. Do you not remember Paul in Romans chapter 7? Can you not hear him talking, even within himself, the very things I know I should do, I don't yet do? The things that I know I shouldn't do, those are the things that I get done. And so we have a choice. In this great passage here in Mark chapter 8, Jesus said, if anyone wishes to come after me, the psalmist said in chapter 73, verse 25, whom do I have in heaven but you? There is nothing on earth I desire but you. That's what it takes. Travel that road less traveled. The consistent desire to be like the Christ. And if you be like him, you're going to go to Jerusalem, as it were. You're going to suffer many things at the hands of people in the world, and you're going to give up your life, because Jesus said, whoever finds his life is going to lose it. You're going to have to give up yourself. Couldn't be said more eloquently than Paul said it in Galatians 2:20. No longer I who live, but Christ living in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And then it's going to take death. You've got to give up your life. You've got to take up your cross. The cross is not just a beautiful little thing you wear around your neck. It's an instrument of death. You put yourself to death and you take on the life of Christ, and you live in the best way that you can. And then there's the devotion to follow me. James and John's mother wanted for them the best, one on the right, one on the left. Jesus looked at them and said, can you drink the cup that I'm about to drink? Can you partake of the cup that I'm about to partake of? And they said, we can. As far as we know, they did. They followed Jesus all the way to death. And so we have choices. And the choice isn't made just one time. Why should we choose the road less traveled? The passage says, because it's a road to the crown. Isn't that neat? Be faithful unto death, I will give you a crown of life. I've been embarrassed several times by dumb mistakes that I've made, by things that I've said. But I will never be as embarrassed as I would be if I'm ashamed of the Lord here in this life, and I refuse to confess him. I refuse to face the conflict that I'm going to face with him when I refuse to be the man I need to be the example I need to be to my family, to you, to the people that I will communicate with in the world, because he's going to say to me, I never knew you. It wasn't that I knew you while you were being good, but I never knew you. And so we need to follow what God says. And so the question this morning is a very simple one. What road are you traveling? Has pride elevated itself in your life, or your desire elevated itself in your life, or has something come between you and the Lord so that when you've come to decisions in your life, like maybe this morning, you may say, I guess I have to admit that Jesus is not the King of Kings and Lord of Lords to me. We need to be following that road. Dr. Robert Frost's words, two roads, two birds in the wood. I took the one less traveled by. That has made all the difference. I can tell you today, the road that you choose today, because you have to continue to choose it. Those of you that are faithful, you're going to have to make decision after decision. So long as you live about being in that difficult way that leads to eternal life. Do you need to make a decision today? I've talked about pride and sinful desires that get you back on that broad way that leads to destruction. But if you're in that road today and you want to get back, what gets you back? Confession. You've never been on that difficult road with Christ. Confessing His name and being buried with Him in baptism. To be raised to walk anew in a new life, forgiven. That's how you get back. If you're an erring child of God, you know how you get back. You've been taught it over and over again. You need to make that decision. Please do it now. Come as we stand and as we sing.
Things that are higher, things that are nobler, these have allured my sight.